Hello, hello, hello. I am your Carol Garcia, hostess with the mostest, Michael Munoz. And welcome to In Your Mouth.
In Your Mouth.
I'm the queen of food who's always in the mood to lick it right, lick it good, show you how to
hug. Oh, God, that's good.
I want to know what you eat from the streets to the sheets. So open wide, honey.
I'm coming.
In Your Mouth.
I got the goosebumps.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hey there and welcome back, folks. Once again, I am your hostess with the mostest, Munoz. And hey, well, spring hath kind of sprungeth here in New York. I don't know. I don't know what we're doing anymore. All I do know is that the diet is dieting, the soul cycle is cycling, and we are on a healthy food journey. You know, it is the get this waistline snatched for this straight wedding at the end of April for your girl Munoz. And listen, I am in a very body positive, like, sphere, right? I want that to be very clear. It's just that I want to feel really good in these clothes that I'm being forced to wear at this wedding. So it's, but like, if this wasn't coming up, I'd be in bed with pizza, not going to spin class early in the morning. You know what I mean? It's I've set attainable goals for myself, and it's all about feeling good. And actually, this reset has been really, really nice. You know, it's just I feel like I have more energy. I'm definitely eating a whole lot better, and it's really interesting. Even though I don't think I eat terribly. Like, because I don't really eat very carb heavy and it's very vegetable forward, and there's not a lot of like greasy foods in my life. And since you all know out there, I live in 120 square feet, so I'm not like frying things in my tiny space because everything will smell like fried food forever. But it's portion size, you know, that like salad that's like massively huge, right? Like the calories in there, if like there's all this dressing and whatnot, you don't really realize that, oh, maybe I shouldn't have that second helping sometimes. But yeah, that's the journey I'm on. And we're here. But I'm really excited. I'm really excited for the nice weather. I'm really excited to get out in these streets and go running, because you know my Latino behind does not run in the cold, but I'm excited to be out in the fresh air and get all that vitamin D, and I'm really excited for today's guest. So I'm going to stop rambling about ridiculous things in my life that nobody really cares about except me and get to the getting on because I'm so excited for today's guest. So without further ado, please help me welcome the one, the only, Rigoberto Flores. Say hi.
Hi. Hello.
How are you, my love?
I am doing well. I am doing well. I'm enjoying this weather. So,
right?
Yeah,
right? It's a nice change, even though it's like going to be, it's like nice for 2 seconds and then rainy and cold. Or
right.
Like,
yeah.
Or like, oh my God, it's so beautiful outside. But the minute you stand in the shade, you're like, why am I freezing?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah,
right? We're very menopausal.
It's that time.
You know, it's so funny. A random thought, and this is how, look, already off the rails. You know, I think it was the New York Times a very long time ago that came out with this article about, I think they interviewed elderly people in a home, like in their like last weeks of life or something like that, not to get too morbid and sad, but they were like, or they questioned these people about like what they would change or their biggest regrets in life or like whatnot. And a lot of them across the board said, we wish we spent more time talking about our feelings than the weather.
Interesting.
And this, like, that's what this, like, weather talk just reminded me of.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because more often than not, think about how often we talk about the weather.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, how are you? Like, how
exactly.
Are you, Rigoberto? How are you feeling today?
Yeah, it really is. It's just, like, you wake up and you just look out the window and, like, first thing, it's like, hey, the weather, I don't know. Yeah, you're right.
I don't know. So, yeah. Like, my mother every morning gives me the full weather report as if I just didn't watch it on TV and we're both not watching,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The same news program, you know?
Yeah.
As opposed to, how are you? Well, it's raining out. I was like, well, no, that's not the answer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So how are you, Rigoberto?
I am doing well, you know? Woke up breathing, a little sleepy. And
yeah,
I feel pretty good. Feel pretty good.
I mean, you got in your mouth, listeners, you can't see, but if you're in the little preview, if you go to my Instagram when this drops, you'll see Rigoberta is wearing the most fabulous glasses, a little fashion glass, which I'm obsessed with. I need to go back to the eye store because I want a pair of Sally Jesse Raphael's.
Oh, that's
my next pair of glasses. I want some big red glasses.
Yeah, yeah.
Some SJRs.
You would look good in red glasses. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, right?
Yeah,
right?
I feel like I can only pull off certain colors. I have a lot of red undertones, so I feel like if I wear red, I look feverish all the time. And so, and then, like, no one wants to be around me because no one wants to be sick.
Like, the consumption's got you all of a sudden. You're like, on my own.
Exactly.
Well, listen, we're already off the rails. And before we get any further, I got to do what I got to do. So in the grand tradition of In Your Mouth, I need to wish you happy National Chiffon Cake Day.
Oh, yeah. Yay. Yeah, I love chiffon cake. Yeah, it was one of the first cakes I made in culinary school.
Great. So, chiffon cake is not something we hear of a lot. Like, who is making chiffon cakes these days? Should I Wikipedia describe it, or do you want to just tell us what a chiffon cake is?
Wikipedia, please. It's been a while.
No, chiffon cake, according to Wikipedia, is a very light cake made with vegetable oil, egg, sugar, flour, baking powder, and flavorings. Being made with vegetable oil instead of traditional solid fat, such as butter or shortening, it is easier to beat air into the batter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I guess the name comes because it's like really light and airy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like, you know, the fabric. That's what I kind of think of when I think of chiffon cakes, fabric.
Yeah, a classic chiffon cake combines the cloud-like texture of angel food cake with a tender richness provided by egg yolks and oil. Thank you, King Arthur Baking. You know? I mean, chiffon cake, I am not eating cake these days. Too many Weight Watchers points, you know?
Yeah. So, I am eating way too much cake these days.
And oh, so, yeah. Your mans are actual.
What was that?
I said your mans are actual.
Oh, actual cake.
Well, that's no fun. Listen, when Oprah Winfrey got on that television and said, I love bread and I am the ambassador for Weight Watchers, let me tell you something. You can eat, I don't know if you know how Weight Watchers work, but it's like basically calorie counting in a different way. It's a point system, right? You know, if you eat this bread, that's a lot of points. I'd rather not eat the bread, even though I want the bread, and eat more food throughout the day. So like the chiffon cake, although you can eat it on this diet, like I choose not to because I'd rather like have more meals, you know?
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
But I do miss cake. Now, does chiffon cake, I don't know if you know this answer, does chiffon cake only come in like, I guess, what is vanilla flavoring?
Or
do you flavor chiffon cakes like any other cake?
Yeah, you can definitely have like chocolate chiffon cake and like other like forms of it. And yeah,
chocolate not limited chiffon. To. When yeah. is a chiffon cake appropriate?
When is it not?
Y'all should have seen his face. He was like, what? What does that even mean? Like, when is it an appropriate time to serve chiffon cake? You know? Well, I don't know. I mean, okay, chiffon cake. I don't know why today is that day, but you know what? I don't really know why any other day is any other day. I didn't even decide to go down like a history route with this one today. So you know what? No matter what you celebrate out there, whether it's chiffon cake day, angel food cake day, or no cake day, I don't even know where I'm going with this. We celebrate you today. And moving right along into this day in gay history, Rigoberta, did you know that in 1985, the Los Angeles Times comes out in favor of gay rights and urges the U.S. Supreme Court to take a stand on more gay-related issues?
Wow, in 1985.
2 points to be made here. A, LA, right? And I think the effect that Hollywood has on politics, and B, the Supreme Court being all up in our business, especially now since it's leaning ultra conservative. So it's just like, eek, I don't know if I want you all making decisions for me, kind people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. So
also 1985, not that long ago.
I know, right? Yeah. So
it's an interesting day, and it's a reminder that history, including gay history, is becoming a little cyclical these days, right? And not necessarily for the better, is what
exactly, yeah.
Is what the gentle reminder is. So we still need to be out in these streets. But I want to get to the getting on and celebrate you. And In Your Mouth listeners, if you didn't know, you're about to know. Rigoberto Flores is a classically trained chocolatier and pastry chef. Rigoberto grew up as a first-generation Mexican-American in a small town, but always had big city dreams. He spent his childhood between Mexico and the United States, learning and appreciating the cultural differences and distinctive flavors of the two countries. Before launching Also Cacao, Rigoberto worked in various kitchens and bakeries, including 3 Michelin star awarded 11 Madison Park, James Beard award nominated Birch and Barley, and most recently Casco Chocolat, did I say that right? Yeah. Which was featured in the New York Times. Through these positions, Rigoberto gathered knowledge and techniques that he has used in creating his own style of chocolate making and establishing Oso Cacao. Also, Cacao is a handcrafted chocolate brand that takes inspiration from Rigoberto's Mexican-American childhood. Also, Cacao begins with the tradition of Mexican-style chocolate making that was passed down by Rigoberto's mother and ancestors and builds on those techniques to create gourmet chocolate bars that are unique and comforting. Yes, welcome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome, and what a resume. 11 Madison. 11 Madison. 11. 11 Madison Park was just in food news for who's head chef there? He paired with a rapper to create a designer peanut butter and jelly that they're selling out of that Madison 11 Madison Park market.
Yeah, yeah. I know very little of that. I know of the peanut butter and jelly. I didn't realize it was a collaboration. I just saw it, like, I get these newsletters from them occasionally, and it was like a featured thing, but
yeah,
I didn't really read through it.
Yeah, I don't know. But such a wonderful resume. And now into chocolate making. I want to start at the very beginning and the love of food, right? Especially cross-culturally and, you know, being here. Where does your love of food come from?
You know, I guess I really don't know, but I guess it would probably be just like for my family. It's just like, you know, we're kind of a family of cooks. And, you know, it was a huge part of my mother's and my, you know, and uncles and aunts' life growing up on a farm ranch in Mexico, where they had to like produce their own food to survive and to sell. And yeah, it's just kind of carried through into this, you know,
into this sphere that is you now as you know, the next generation Jacques Therese, right?
Yeah.
Jacques who?
Yeah, I know.
But tell me, like, so fine, this is instilled in you, like, from your family. When was the decision to go into food as a career?
Probably, like, in my early 20s. I was taking the more traditional, like, higher education route. And unfortunately, that didn't really work out. Or, you know, it just didn't work out. And then...
Wait, what were you going to study?
I don't know. Maybe that was the reason why it didn't work out.
Oh, because we've heard all sorts of stories of, like, I was, like, a big, like, you know, executive, or I was a lawyer, and I gave all that up to, like, you know, work on the line or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I just, I guess I was still just trying to figure my identity, and I was working at a local coffee house, and the owner had... We did every baked good from scratch. And I think that kind of like re-sparked an interest in preparing food and baked goods. And so, yeah, I just kind of, she suggested going to culinary school, and I did some research and took some time off to actually work in a kitchen. It was, I would help my mom out at the restaurant, but I've never actually worked a line. Until that point. And I did that for a season. And yeah, I was like, I think I'm going to do this. I think I'm going to go to culinary school and make the decision to make this work out.
And wait, so, you just said you helped your mom out at the restaurant. Did she own a restaurant?
At that time, she didn't own a restaurant. She was working for a restaurant. And so she was a line cook. And slowly... when she came into this country, she started off as a dishwasher and then just kind of worked her way up and then eventually bought her own restaurant and has a catering company and just kind of...
Way to leave all these details out. This is what we want to know.
Yeah. And so, yeah, just living the American dream, you know, just kind of...
Yes, talk about it because it's important. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to. Yeah, she came into this country and she actually didn't know the language, didn't know anything. She came in as a migrant worker, working out in the fields. And then she moved to Oklahoma with to be closer to family, we had like my uncles were already there and they were established. Mm-hmm. And so they hooked her up with a dishwashing job. And throughout the year, she just kind of like kept pushing and pushing to learn more and just wanted to get out of being in the dish pit. And, you know, they slowly saw potential, so they would give her more responsibility. And she took English speak classes. She learned the language, English. And, yeah. And eventually the owner, the restaurateur, he had like a couple restaurants or a few restaurants in our hometown, and he was selling one. And so she was just like, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to buy a restaurant. And, you know, this is, you know, and make it work. And she did. And, you know, and I'm like so proud of her. And so.
Is it still running today?
Yeah, it's still running and she's doing well.
How many years?
I think she took ownership maybe like 8 years ago.
That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, she's been doing really well. And she's really happy with it. And, you know, I'm happy with her. And so.
Yeah. So you decided to help her out at the restaurant. There we go. There we go.
I wouldn't know if I had any decision in that. She would actually, you know, as a teenager, kind of like force me to get out of bed and just like, you need to learn, you know, some proper work ethics, you know.
So. Yeah, incredible. So why baking instead of cooking?
I think I just kind of just gravitated more to baked goods. One, I really enjoy eating baked goods a lot. And I felt, yeah, I think I just was drawn more to that, just like the science and the creativity aspect and just kind of, and then just eating it as well.
Yes. So obviously it's delicious. I can't have a baked good in this apartment. It'll be for Christmas. There's always panettone in my tiny apartment. And the minute it's open is the minute that I will devour.
Yeah.
All of it. You know what I mean?
I am the same way. I just recently got a box of brownies and they're like tiny, tiny little portions. And I had to really restrain myself, like hold my, because I could like eat the entire pack, you know, in one sitting. And I already had like, you know, a whole pizza for dinner. So it's just like stuff, but puts baked goods in front of me. I can't stop.
Those of us single folk out there have to keep things a little tight and right? We can't be eating pizza and baked goods all night. You know, I got to be out. I got to have the energy and the strength to be out in these streets, right?
Yeah. Well, I normally
you know this New York City gay world can be real vicious.
Yes.
But fine. Rub it in my face that I can't have baked goods and pizza. Fine.
I don't normally eat like that. I felt it was a treat. It was a treat. And so.
I would die for a slice of pizza right now. That sounds delicious. Especially that pizza with that good pepperoni that like turns into like cups of oil.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Right?
I'm hungry right now. I actually have a little leftover, so I may just actually eat that.
You know what? I'm done with you. Get off my podcast.
I tell myself, because I am training for a marathon, it's part of the, like, carbo loading.
So, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything to make us feel better, make ourselves feel better about this. My friend Iman, shout out to you, Iman, sent me... she's big on the internet. Go follow her, Iman in the Kitchen. We did Easy Bake Battle together, and she's Kurdish, and she's always making these delicious, like, Kurdish foods. And she made baklava one day for the internet, and I slid into her DMs, and I was like, I am so mad at you, and that there is none of this in my apartment. Well, lo and behold, 2 days later, there was all these baklava and these Kurdish sesame coconut cookies, which I've never had, which were delicious.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
And I started, and I was like, no, ma'am. Nope, you will eat this whole thing. And I had just started the diet. I put them in a Tupperware. Again, we are off the rails here. Threw them in the fridge, and I would have one one square of baklava a night for 5 Weight Watchers points. And I don't know if I was supposed to keep that baklava for like the 2.5 weeks that I did. But I did, and I ate every last piece, one a night.
Wow. Good for you.
It was delicious.
Yeah.
Delicious. So anyways, back, I don't even know where we left off. We are off the rails. We're in a full argument now because you keep throwing carbs in my face. Right? So you're there. You're successful. You've gone to culinary school. You've put in the time, obviously. I mean, 11 Madison Park is worth its weight in gold, platinum, and, you know, it is the standard, right? Like, you work there, you can work anywhere, right? Honestly. What made you pivot then into creating your own line of chocolate?
I've always been interested in chocolate. Even in culinary school, I would, that was the part that I was more interested in. And I did an externship, at Burdick's, a chocolate shop. They're kind of spread out now. And so it's just been a strong passion of mine. And even in kitchens, I would try to gravitate towards like doing some of the chocolate work. And I also think it's part of just kind of continuing this legacy that growing up and hearing stories about how my family would make chocolate from scratch with, you know, they would grind it up in a molcajete and just like throw in some sugar and like they would either snack on it or sell it. And so, but just, I think that just kind of like imprinted my mind, and it's just like in, I don't know, just kind of wanted to continue that and just kind of see what I could do. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's just always been a part of my identity.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of your identity and being in such high profile kitchens, right? We often talk, this is a big gay food podcast, and we often talk the trials and tribulations of being behind the line, just existing behind the line, but then with the added layer of being LGBTQ behind the line and how difficult they may be some at times, right? Because, you know, the kitchen can be a difficult place to exist in, right? As somebody on a different journey. What was your experience like?
You know, it was pretty tough. You know, once I was in the, in the restaurant world, you know, I was already out, but there is like this machismo, like male toxicity in the kitchen. And so it was challenging at times to like really be comfortable. And and I think it was easier being in pastries, and because pastry kitchens are usually slightly removed. I'm kind of glad I'm no longer part of that. I'm sure it's much easier, but a lot of the times, you know, I felt maladjusted just for one, being Latino, and then also being gay on top of that. And so, I mean, when I was in these kitchens, there wasn't a lot of diversity. And so it's just kind of, yeah, if you don't fit a certain group, if you're not part of a certain group, you're probably going to get bullied. And so,
yeah. And what was the key to getting through that or coming through that?
I guess knowing that it was like temporary and just kind of taking what I need from that experience and applying it for something for the future, knowing that that wasn't going to be permanent and that I'm not going to have to, this is not my place, you know, and take what I needed. So,
yeah.
And get the hell out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Listen, sometimes you got to get the hell out. There was a whole movie called Get Out. We often talk on this pod because our stories are important and we never know who's listening about coming out. And I was wondering if you would share with us before we cut out to the break your coming out story.
Yeah. So I was outed when I was like 15 and a half in high school. And so it was kind of a challenging time. One, being in high school and then also being forced to be out. And and then I later came out to my family, which wasn't any easier. They're at that time a little bit more traditionalist, you know, very religious. And so we didn't speak for a while. I think it was just part of their process and trying to understand. We're now fine. We now kind of, you know, I've moved on. They're very loving. They're very accepting of me and my partner. But yeah, it wasn't a really easy road. And it didn't really get easier being in a small town in Oklahoma. And so where I grew up.
Yeah, how did you stay grounded enough to come through that?
You know, kind of just like thinking about just like, I know that there's something else out there. And so I think I just had this like innate drive that's just like, I'm not sure how, but I will eventually go somewhere else and leave because this environment wasn't welcoming. And so at that time, and mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just like I said, I just had to get out. And I didn't really know how. And I think culinary school was a way of me getting out. Food was a way of me getting out and kind of creating my own sense of comfort. So I think
you make a really interesting point. And I don't think in the past 5 years we've heard this. You just said food was a way of me getting out, right? And that there was a comfort in it. And we often talk about, you know, we're always talking about like food, you know, every major life event happening around food, right? We've talked a lot about this, a lot on this pod about the comfort of food, right? During like the grieving process and right, and how food can be comforting during like hard times and, you know, all of this centered around food. But food being a springboard into for lack of a better way to put it, right? Because maybe it's not as dramatic as salvation. You know what I mean? Yeah. but to propel you into a place of comfort and safety, you know? Yeah. And safety, and I use the word safety as you haven't expressed like a violent situation, but like safety in feeling safe in yourself and safe in your surroundings and like, you know? What I mean is a really interesting take on your experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I found comfort and solace in food and I felt safe with, you know, food and I think there's still a certain comfort there, you know, and I gravitate towards that. And so.
Yeah, the warm blanket of like chocolate croissants, you know?
yeah. Chiffon cakes. Comfort me with chiffon
cakes. Yes, yes. Way to bring it full circle. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing your story and letting me carry that for you and propel it forward. As I always say, we never know who's listening and who we can affect. So with warm blankets of baked goods that comfort us into a sense of safety, we will leave that there, you know, before we cut out into this break. So I think now would be a great time to send Rigoberto into the kitchen to bake up some carbs. And we will be right back with my favorite part and the audience's favorite part of the podcast.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Rigoberto, I hope you're ready for my favorite part and the audience's favorite part of the podcast. A little something we like to call Food News Update. Food News.
Ooh, honey, you ain't ready.
Girl, spill the tea.
News Update.
Van Leeuwen launched a Hidden Valley Ranch ice cream.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Now, this is a little old news. Like, this is a couple weeks ago, but In Your Mouth, listeners, right? You know that, like, I am not recording on, you know, release day. And so sometimes we just need to catch up to the food news because, you know, it is food news aplenty. It is a cornucopia sometimes of news. And this one, I just couldn't let slide by. Ranch ice cream. As a pastry queen herself, how do we feel about ranch in the ice cream maker?
That is a hard pass for me. Never been a fan of ranch. I don't
what?
See
much.
Yeah, which is
wait.
Go, yeah.
Wait.
Not for me.
You what? Oh, no. Oh, no. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast. It's been very lovely. Thank you for your time. And thank you all out there for listening. Okay. All right. Our second argument of the pod. All right. Ranch is delicious, but continue.
Yeah, it was something I just didn't grow up with. And I always thought it was like this weird foreign thing that people would dip pizza into or like pour it onto their
delicious
pizza.
Yeah, delicious.
Not for me. I don't know what it is.
All right, so not for you. You're already starting out of I don't like ranch place, and now throw it in some ice cream. Now, have you had Van Leeuwen ice cream? It's delicious.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They're not a sponsor. These people know how to make ice cream.
That is true. Yeah. Yeah,
their vegan ice cream.
Oh,
so, yeah. The vegan ice cream is fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, obsessed, absolutely obsessed. But you know what? This isn't their first foray into interesting flavors. They did a Grey Poupon flavor a while ago, and they did the Kraft macaroni and cheese ice cream too, and. Even though a Grey Poupon ice cream, I've been obsessed lately with that Maillet or male Dijon mustard. I will eat it out of the jar.
Yeah, that's
so
good. Pretty solid.
It's so good. Right? It is solid. Right? And so a little cream in that, maybe a little sweet cream, that may be good. I don't know. But this ranch, I've seen people do potato chips or They're dipping salty things in the ranch ice cream, which I think may work.
Yeah, I can see that working, but still,
but
a pass.
As a standstill, no. But I mean, today's food news update, and y'all are about to find out, is all very, very brand related. And I figured, you know, with the dawn of spring, let's see what these brands are cooking up for us, right? To make it punny. And this isn't the only new flavor coming from Van Leeuwen. The full spring lineup includes sweet maple cornbread, delicious, blood orange chocolate chip, sounds great, carrot cake, hello, strawberry shortcake, oh yeah, honey graham cracker, and limoncello cake.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, things to look forward to, right? Yeah. I think the ranch was a springboard into the actual, like, good flavors.
Yeah, that makes sense. Bringing attention.
Like, pay attention. Look what we're doing. All right. And no shade to Hidden Valley, because they are fans of mine, albeit not a sponsor. And I am a fan of theirs. So you're not here for this, but I'm on the fence. I'm on the fence because I can't fully betray HVR.
Fair enough.
Coors Light releases beer-flavored popsicles.
Yes.
Beer-flavored popsicles. Listen, yes? Are we a beer queen? Do we like the beer?
I do like beer. And Coors Light, I grew up in Oklahoma. It's like our state beer. yeah. I will get behind that. I would definitely try it for sure. So.
All right, it's a taste of the Rockies. Yeah, isn't it? Yeah. Isn't that what they say?
I think so.
Well, they did this because of March Madness, which I know nothing about. I know nothing about March Madness. I don't even pretend to know. But they've released these new beer-flavored popsicles, and they are non-alcoholic treats that taste like you've just cracked into an ice-cold can to help you chill out if your bracket goes sideways or your favorite school gets knocked out. Now, I don't know if you know anything about March Madness, but what I do know is, why come out with a beer popsicle and have it be non-alcoholic?
Yeah, yeah. You lost me there at the non-alcoholic.
Right? Yeah. Notice how these are dessert. This is a dessert-themed food news update, too. Just for you. I did hear. Like, why is this non-alcoholic? Like, give me my frozen beer.
Exactly. It's like, what's the point?
What's the point?
Yeah.
I'll just have a regular beer and one of those, like, you know, regular icy pop things that, like, come in like the 40 pack.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That probably tastes better. I don't care how they release this thing, right? Because they're not paying me to do this. But this is really popular. You know what the other weird thing about this is? Is that you have to be 21 years old to buy them.
But there's no alcohol. That's weird.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I don't get it. And they're having some sort of contest where you can win... where you can win like a 6-pack or a 24-pack of these. No one really cares. I don't really think we're here for this, right? I mean, this is the type of thing that people will get their hands on and then sell on eBay for like $2,000, right? Because it's like, you know, these like collector's item brand things, yeah. These weird brand things. I'm not here for it. And last but not least, for sure, the new Frank's Red Hot sauce flavor is for pickle lovers. Frank's Red Hot Dill Pickle. See, yes. I capped it. Ranch and Frank's Red Hot. You see how we do here? Yeah. Are we a hot sauce fan?
Yes, very much so. And so,
are we a Frank's fan?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if I actually had Frank's. And so.
Well, if you've ever had a buffalo wing, you've definitely had Frank's.
Okay. Then, I probably had Frank's, yeah.
Because Frank's is the standard, also not a sponsor. But Frank's is pretty much the standard when it comes to buffalo wings, you know? Frank's and butter. Let's go down a hot sauce trail. What is your favorite hot sauce?
I guess, yeah. So maybe it's not like... I think I just like salsas. I just think I like, that's what I interpret.
Wait, you
as
can't salt. Come in here. You cannot come on this podcast, right, as a Mexican-American and be like, give me salsa. No. Where is the Cholula? Where is the Valentina? Where is the Tapatio? Where is the, what's the other one I have here? It starts with an H. Are you kidding?
I know. See,
My family, we didn't have that. They would make their own salsas. But Valentina, I do like Valentina. So that I'm familiar with.
Valentina, delicious. What am I looking at here? I'm looking at, oh my God, I have so many. I've named most of them. The Cholula chili garlic. There's definitely Frank's here. I have Shaquanda's hot sauce up there. What else can I see from my little couch here? I have so many. Interesting. Not even a Tabasco? A Chipotle Tabasco?
I used to put Tabasco back in the day, but yeah, I guess it's just like, I like making my own. I don't know. Just making my own salsa.
Okay. All right. Well, salsa is different than hot sauce.
I know. So I was a bit confused. So yeah.
Listen, don't complain to me when your people slide into your DMs angry that you don't.
Yeah.
You're a disgrace.
Yeah, I'm going to have to close up shop.
Oh my God. Listen, in your mouth, listeners, he know not what he do. We will give them a pass. Somebody please send him like a variety of hot sauces, okay? Please. To put on your eggs and your pizza, okay? To throw, oh my God, you could probably throw this Frank's dill pickle on top of that Van Leeuwen Ranch ice cream. And I bet you it would be worth it.
Yeah. That is interesting. You should pitch that idea. You should make it happen.
Yeah. Or I should just do it on TikTok and watch that thing send me over the edge into like food famous.
Yeah.
That's an idea. Now, I am a big Frank's Red Hot fan. I think it's, and no offense to y'all out there, I don't think it's spicy. I think it's white people spicy, if you know what I mean. Right? It's more like salty, vinegary. And I'm curious about how this tastes like dill pickle, because it's whatchamacallit. It's like, it's already vinegar forward, Frank's is. And so like, and when I think of dill pickles, I think of very briny, vinegar forward. So I'm curious on what this tastes like. But the spicy flavor company revealed its dill pickle hot sauce in its attempt to go after what the New York Times names the flavor of the summer. I didn't even know they did that.
Yeah, interesting.
Right?
I could see. Yeah.
I tried to look up other New York Times flavors of the summer, but since I don't pay for the New York Times, they won't let me see it. So there's a paywall.
Yeah,
I was denied. But what was really interesting to me about this food news update is that it was all like kind of things that are propelling us towards like the spring and the summer. And that was the vibe I wanted to bringing it all the way back to the weather and the beginning of this podcast. I'm definitely here for this. I don't know if you are, but I think that's the best way to end. Food news update. Take that to the chocolate factory with you. Wait, does also cacao have like a Mexican chocolate, like a spicy chocolate?
Yes. Yeah.
Bar?
Actually, yeah.
Throw that on the ranch ice cream.
I don't know. You got me really excited, and then downhill.
You know what? That's what you get for fighting with me on this podcast, right? It's going to be a ranch ice cream podcast from here on out. No, let's start here. Why did you decide to start a chocolate brand?
I just wanted to introduce the American audience that like there's so much more than these traditional European style chocolates. Mexican chocolate is only known to be like one dimensional and only associated with like heat. And so with Oso Cacao, I am trying to
introduce the various flavors and ingredients and techniques that are so part of like my culture and like my memories and experience, and introduce that into the American audience. There's so much more than these European styles. Not to say that they're bad. Every chocolate has its place, but why can't Mexican style chocolate be seen on the same level as European style chocolates?
So you bring up an interesting question and something that I've never thought about, that the different styles of chocolate. I just always thought chocolate was chocolate. Right. You know what I mean? And I've had Mexican chocolate, and I've had, I guess, what we're calling European chocolate and American chocolate, if we can call it chocolate. Full of wax. But can you just give us like some cliff notes on what the difference is?
Yeah, I'll start off with Mexican chocolate. Mexican chocolate, when people think of Mexican chocolate, they think of like a coarse, gritty, a less refined texture, and which is really great.
Okay.
You know, and it's flavored usually with like cinnamon. It's like the common flavor added. And European chocolate, the cacao is kind of grind a little bit. It's a little bit more refined, and so it's smoother, and it's seen as like more luxurious. And so, like, you think of like Valrhona or truffles and bonbons. And so what I'm doing with Oso Cacao is trying to like bring these two together, in a sense that I'm taking Mexican style chocolate and making it a little bit more refined, and still using like some of the coarse grittiness to kind of add a little bit of texture on the palate. And so, and
what
also
makes it coarse and gritty?
It's the cacao nibs not being broken down like to the same level.
Got it. Because I've had those rounds too that were like extra coarse and gritty, that like I am assuming, or I always thought when they were like gifted to me or bought them, that they were to make the hot chocolate, you know, like they do the pour over.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Then,
like, the whisking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing that, the same process. I source all my cacao from Mexico. And so it's the same process. And I break it down and I make it a little bit more palatable for the palate, for the mouthfeel. And then I incorporate flavors while it's grinding down as well. And like, for example, I have a mole pepita bar. And so I'm using a recipe that's been passed down from my family. And I've just incorporated some of those flavors and elements into this bar using cacao from Mexico, and just kind of continuing the legacy of my parents and, you know, family members, ancestors, and just kind of making it my own and making it, trying to bring it to the American audience. And so,
yeah, I think you mentioned before that your family was making some chocolate at some point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they used to make it. They did everything to kind of sell at the market. They would make their own cheese, so like chicharrones, which is like fried pig skin.
Yep, delicious.
Yeah.
Delicious. And just keep tempting me with fatty foods. I've been eating chicken and vegetables, right? Yeah, watch you send me over the edge.
I know. Yeah.
Meanwhile, we're sitting here talking about chocolate, and you know what's not in my apartment? Any chocolate.
Well, the good thing about well, if you play your cards right.
Oh my goodness. So when you say you're incorporating flavors, traditional flavors, you mean flavors beyond, like, for lack of a better way to put it, just education-wise about chocolate, because I don't know a lot. incorporating flavors beyond just what is what we know to be just regular, like, milk / dark chocolate flavors, correct?
Right, right. And so I also make my own like plant-based or dairy-free milk and dairy-free white chocolate. And so I'm incorporating flavors.
Oh, like, is white chocolate chocolate? Big debate.
That is a big debate. I think it is. I do not discriminate. I
You are an equal opportunity chocolate
here. Yes. And so, yeah, and I'm just, you know, I think people just associate Mexican flavor just like chilies. And so I have a sweet potato and amaranth, which is a flavor sweet potato I grew up with. It was my version of breakfast. And I use puffed candied amaranth that I candy myself, and I throw that in to kind of give it like a mimic that breakfast cereal texture. And I use other flavors that just kind of resonated with me in my Mexican American upbringing. And so,
mm-hmm. What does amaranth taste like?
To me, it's a little like earthy. And so and I think it kind of balances out the natural sweetness of sweet potato. And then I candy it to kind of like balance out that little like earthiness. And so it's a little gets a little toasty, which, yeah.
I don't think I've ever had amaranth, and I'm looking it up now. And one of the first things that come up are quinoa and amaranth, the same thing. And they are similar, but they are not the same thing, but they're like in the same family.
Yeah, yeah.
For those of you trying to like kind of figure out what it is. Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually one of the more like popular items, which kind of surprised me because I just started introducing dairy-free options and people like loved it and it became like the top seller. So,
great. I love that. Well, where can we find it?
On my website, osocacao.com. You'll see a variety of selections ranging from white chocolate, dark chocolate, and I hope to launch some truffles using a stone ground chocolate as well. So.
Beautiful. You know what? What sets you apart from the rest?
I think, yeah, just kind of being true to my culture and just like using Mexican flavors that are not so common or even thought of as being Mexican, and just like employing like certain techniques and just kind of, yeah, bringing a totally new world. And so.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. The Aladdin Jasmine of it all. A whole new world.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Well, what a special day and what a special treat, even though there's no chocolate at my fingertips.
Yet.
I'm only playing. Don't you tempt me.
Right.
Dare tempt me.
I'm going to send you over the edge.
Right? No, honestly. I can't thank you enough for giving me time out of your busy schedule. Today has been really, really special. And I am so happy to call you part of my big gay food family. Let the kids know where they can find you. Again, where they can buy the chocolate, see the chocolate, taste the chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You can follow me at osocacao on Instagram, or you can go to the website, osocacao.com. And I am happy to share my love for chocolate.
I can't wait to have a nibble myself. Again, thank you. What a special day. And I just can't thank you enough for being here.
Thank you. This has been so much fun and a great way to start off the week. And so,
yeah, right. Yeah. A little something that's not the weather.
Yeah.
to bring it full circle. Yeah. In Your Mouth, listeners, no matter where you are, please stay safe out there. Oh my God, they caught those dastardly bastards who were going into the gay bars and drugging people and whatnot. Finally, that scary moment hopefully is over. And but stay safe out there, you know. Climate change is real and the weather is doing crazy things, as we can see all over the news. If you're in one of these areas, you know, stay safe, stay strong. We are with you. And if you're anywhere else, have a great day. You got this, you know. Attainable goals are the best goals to set. Attainable goals. Love yourself. And other than that, I don't know what I'm saying here. And other than that, as always, thank you for listening to In Your Mouth.
Got the goosebumps.